The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Of course, there's a different way.
Welcome to the Mirror Football Podcast with me, Simon Head, the day after the closure of the transfer window. Joining me on this week's show, Darren Lewis and Robbie Savage to pick over the bones over what, in the end, was quite a busy day of transfer activity. Right, joining us on the Mirror Football Podcast is Mr. Football Spy himself, Darren Lewis. How are you, Darren?
I'm well, thank you.
And yesterday, transfer deadline day. Massive day for you personally, on and off the Football Spy camera all day. Quite a slow start to the day, it's fair to say, but it got quite lively towards the end.
Yeah, it really did start to pick up towards the end. It was clear by midway through the day that clubs were trying to move players out as much as bring players in. I didn't think I would say this, but one of the clubs I think did the best business of the day was Stoke, because obviously they've got a European campaign to think about and they needed to bring in quality, and they've brought in Peter Crouch up front that suits their style of play. Wilson Palacios has come in as well. Tony Pulis needed a defensive midfielder. He's got one in the shape of Wilson Palacios. It could be said that Palacios hasn't been the same player since he had a family bereavement a couple of years ago, but you never know, maybe a change of scenery, a new voice that he's hearing in the dressing room, new teammates, new surroundings, might actually help his game to improve again. But all round, Stoke have done excellent business.
They've had a really, really good transfer window. They're a huge side already. They've signed Peter Crouch as well, so that's a real weapon for them. But going back to Arsenal, are they still missing that sort of enforcer in the middle of the park? If Alex Song isn't fit, Frimpong is still young. They had a chance to get Scott Parker. They didn't get him. He's gone to Spurs. Is that a big miss for Arsene Wenger?
I personally think not. I think Scott Parker's a good player, but I think that he didn't represent value. He's 31 years old, I think, in October. And I think as far as Arsene Wenger and Arsenal are concerned, he still didn't represent value in terms of trying to reinforce the midfield. The player they wanted was Yann Mbaïla from Rennes. He's very good. He's a young player, but he's very tough. He's quick. He's had rave reviews for his performances, and rightly so, in midfield. But what they have is Song and Frimpong. I think a lot of people underestimate Frimpong, because we've seen from his performances already, and we've only, three games into the season, but we know that Frimpong is a player. They've waited a year for him. He was injured last year, so he couldn't play any part in last season, but now he's fit again, and I think we will, by the end of this season, be talking about him as a very, very good player indeed.
And is one of the lessons to come out of transfer deadline day that you're far better off doing your business early in the window? Look at Manchester United, and in the main, look at Liverpool. I know they've made a couple of moves, but their squads were pretty much strengthened early on, and they got the players they wanted. They got them in. In the case of Liverpool, they paid big money, but they've got the players they wanted. Whereas you compare that with Arsenal, who were scrabbling around at the last minute, and to a lesser degree Tottenham as well, who tried and failed to get Gary Cahill. Is that a lesson to the managers to actually try and get involved in the transfer window early doors, get the players in quickly?
I think you're absolutely right. I think Liverpool have had a superb transfer window, not only because of the players that they've managed to get in, but because of the players they've managed to get out. They've had a complete clear out of all of the deadwood, the Christian Poulsens, the Nabil El Zahr, Joe Cole in his big wages have gone to Lille. I think they've had a fantastic window in that sense, because no longer are all of those fringe players who are soaking up the wage bill around to kind of just mooch around the training ground at Melwood. Even guys like Philip Deggan, who's just been absolutely useless, instead of keeping him on because they couldn't sell him, they cancelled his contract yesterday. They've really been decisive about getting rid of all of those players who are not going to get any games, and cutting their links with the Rafael Benitez regime. In terms of the players they got in, Jordan Henderson is going to be a good player. Stuart Downing's already a good player. And I think Kenny Dalglish, you look at that side, they've not had Steven Gerrard, but they've made a really good impression already this season. And I think that they're going to go from strength to strength.
And looking across Stanley Park, it's a different story completely for David Moyes at Everton. He's brought two players in, Denis Straquilasi, from Tigre in Argentina on a loan, and Royston Drenthe from Real Madrid also on loan. But they've lost one of their talismen. Mm. Mikel Arteta's gone for £10 million. Is that a cheap price to lose him for? And how would you be feeling if you were David Moyes right now?
Well, it's a hard one, really, because, I mean, yeah, you're right. They brought two players in. Strakwelezi, he's 23 years old, scored a lot of goals for Tigre in Argentina. But will he adapt to the English Premier League? We've seen lots of players come here, have scored lots of goals, but just can't cope with the English Premier League. So we'll wait and see if he does manage to adapt. Royston Drenthe is a journeyman. He's not really managed to fit into any of the teams he's played for in the last couple of seasons. Real Madrid haven't wanted him for quite some time. So again, interesting to see if he does manage to become part of David Moyes' plans. Mikel Arteta is the interesting one, because when I was talking about Arsenal, I was saying if he stays fit, he can be a very good player. Now, some people would argue he played 29 times in the league last season for Arsenal, and his injury record is actually better than Robin Van Persie, so maybe I'm doing him a bit of a disservice. However, he's been at his best for Everton when he first arrived, and you wouldn't necessarily say that he's been at his best in the last season or so. Scored two goals in the last three games for Everton, so he's had a good solid start to the season. How will they be feeling? Well, they need the finances, but that finances will not go in another player, and I think that's why Everton fans will be disappointed that he's gone.
And another team that making big headlines during the transfer window, Queen's Park Rangers. They've come in, they've got the new owner now in Tony Fernandez. He said he'd back Neil Warnock, and he has. He's gone in there, he's made a host of new signings. Anton Ferdinand, I think, was the latest, the last one they got done just at the end of the transfer deadline there. Sean Wright Phillips has come in as well. But they've done quite a good job of bringing sort of proven Premier League players into the club.
Mm. I slightly disagree with you in terms of proven Premier League players, because Anton Ferdinand didn't manage to hold down the players at West Ham or at Sunderland. Some people would argue, if you're being fairly harsh, Sean Wright Phillips hasn't played regularly for Manchester City for some time. But then again, to be fair to Sean Wright Phillips, you look at the squad at City over the last couple of seasons and you can see why he's probably struggled to get into that squad. But as far as QPR are concerned, I think they can be happy with their work. For me personally, the best bit of business they've done this summer is changing the ownership of the club and getting someone in prepared to back Neil Warnock, because he's done a fantastic job bringing them into the Premier League. And I think that he deserved to be given a run at the job and to have the faith of the people in charge of the football club. Yes, they've brought in Anton Ferdinand and Joey Barton and Sean Wright Phillips, and they had that ambitious move for Sebastian Bassong from Spurs as well, but that broke down because Spurs couldn't get Gary Cahill. But I think they're certainly a better side going out of the window than they were going into it, and they'll have a chance. Don't get me wrong, I still think that they may well struggle this season because I don't think they've got enough quality up front, but I still do think that they've got a better squad going forward than they had before the deadline.
So looking at the transfer deadline overall, the deadline day overall, and perhaps the window overall.
Yes.
Who do you think would be your sort of two or three nailed on star signings, the guys who are really going to deliver for their clubs going forward this season?
Well, here's what. Arsenal, I think that Jovinho is going to be a star. I really do like him. He's quick. He's not afraid to run at people. But he also has very good delivery as well. And I think they've missed him. He's obviously been suspended because of that spat he had with Joey Barton in a game against Newcastle. So I think he's going to be a big star for them. So too, Per Mertesacker as well. Not necessarily because of what he does on the pitch. Actually, that's a very silly thing to say. Quite clearly because of what he does on the pitch. But also because of his leadership quality as well. He's played 75 times for Germany. He's a very calm, very professional individual. Very efficient, obviously. But he's worked with good players, both for his club side at Werder Bremen and for his national team as well. And I think he might be able to bring that kind of leadership to Arsenal as well. So those two players, I think, are going to be excellent for them. I do like... It's weird, actually, because when Liverpool played Arsenal, I thought Frimpong, in comparison to Jordan Henderson, looked a better player. But I think in the game at Anfield that Liverpool played the other day, Jordan Henderson really did start to come out of himself, and I think he will improve under Kenny Dalglish. It's saying something that Kenny Dalglish has allowed Raul Morales to go to Chelsea, because he had a very good end to last season. But that says a lot for Kenny Dalglish's confidence in the likes of Jordan Henderson, Charlie Adam, and their ability to be able to take Liverpool forward going into the new season.
And on the topic of Liverpool, they've made three outstanding, in my view at least, three outstanding attacking signings. Mm. Andy Carroll, Luis Suarez, and yesterday Craig Bellamy. Mm. Bellamy's obviously going back to Liverpool. He was there before. Obviously, he had a well-publicised problem at Manchester City, ended up at Cardiff for a year. How will Bellamy do back at Liverpool? Do you think he'll get more of a crack at the first team? Can you see a situation with Kenny Dalglish operating with all three in the same first team?
No, I wonder if Kenny Dalglish is going to use Bellamy as an impact player, somebody who comes on late but can change the game. He's got a lot of guile, craft, he works hard, he's got pace as well, but he can still score goals. And I think as far as Craig Bellamy is concerned, Kenny Dalglish may well bring him on. Listen, remember last couple of seasons we had coming on to change games, got the likes of David Ngo, a young player. It was a huge ask for him to come on in tight games and ask him to be the difference. Craig Bellamy can be that difference, particularly with the supply that he will get at Liverpool. I think as far as Bellamy is concerned, he's already talked about it being an honour to sign for Kenny Dalglish. So I think it may well be a different stay that he has at Anfield this time around than it was before, when he probably didn't. His attitude, he may admit, I would say, wasn't perhaps all there. Now playing for a legend of the football club, I think it could be a very different story. I could see him in some games maybe even playing alongside Luis Suarez, and that would be a frontline of trickery, pace, ingenuity, craft. And I think that would get goals as well, because I think there is still a little bit of doubt about Andy Carroll for all that money that they've spent on him. But I've got to just say before you move on, the player that really does intrigue me is the centre-half that they bought, because Sebastian Coates, 20 years old. They had a lot of injuries, Uruguay, just before the Copa America. He was brought in very late, went on to become the best young player at the tournament. And for around about £7-8 million, when you consider that Bolton wanted £17-18 million for Gary Cahill, he could be an absolute bargain from this transfer window. So I'll be looking to see how he adapts at Anfield. I don't expect him to go straight into the first team, but when he does play, a lot of eyes will be on him to see if he can make the grade at Anfield.
And obviously Liverpool, one of the big winners of the transfer window, it could be argued. Who would you say were the biggest losers in terms of the Premier League? Who should really be looking at the past month and thinking, where did it all go wrong?
Well, the irony is, I think to a certain extent, Arsenal still do. Yes, okay, Arsenal fans can be happier than they were 48 hours ago because they've got in Arteta, but I say again, Ben Ayoun, if he's not good enough for Chelsea, why is he good enough for Arsenal? I just think when it looked, and Nasri has come out and told France Football that he told Arsenal in June that he wanted to leave, so they've had a long time to get replacements in, and they haven't managed to do that, or they didn't manage to do that before that mad scramble on deadline day night. And Fabregas as well, similar situation. They knew he was going, they waited a long time. Fans actually wanted to see the likes of Eden Hazard at Lille. They wanted to see Yann Mbaila. They wanted even possibly to see Snyder. They wanted the club to break the bank. And instead they've paid that £10 million for Arteta. I tell you, another club who have lost out, obviously Everton, but Tottenham fascinate me. Because yes, Adebayor is a good signing. And on the face of it, again, good business to get rid of the fringe players. Hutton, Jenas, Bentley, a lot of those players who are not going to get any football next season. However, I look at that squad, they needed more creativity in midfield. They needed Diarra in midfield. As far as Modric is concerned, I would have sold him, because I think that if he, having named Chelsea as a specific club that he wanted to go to, I think that that was the end of his time for me at Tottenham. Spurs fans will be happy he stayed, and hopefully his head will be right and his attitude will be right going into the new season. But I just wonder if that may well be something that has an impact on Tottenham going into the new campaign.
Another club who did virtually no business on transfer deadline day was Manchester United. Did all their business early on.
Mm.
Owen Hargreaves, released by Manchester United, goes across town to Manchester City. Very rare that you see that happen with a player goes across town in Manchester.
Rare. Obviously, we know all about Carlos Tevez.
Yeah.
But I get your general gist. And I think as far as Owen Hargreaves is concerned, United let him go at the end of the season. And understandably so, he'd played 11 minutes in the previous 2 years. And so as far as he's concerned, he's had terrible, terrible luck with injuries. But he put on that video on YouTube, and it seems to have done the trick because he had that interest. He suits the bill for Manchester City because he has the time to get fit. He has the time to basically get, if you like, embed himself in within the club. And then obviously when the likes of Yaya Toure, for example, go to the African Cup of Nations, they have ready-made reinforcements and guys to step into the first team. Let's just hope and cross our fingers, and I'm sure everyone does, even neutral fans, that he has a good run of without injuries, because I think as far as he's concerned, we all know he was one of the players at a tournament at the 2006 World Cup, but he's just been very, very unlucky with injury. But if he does stay fit, he's a good signing for them. I think overall, United have had a good transfer window. They clearly didn't get the player they really wanted, who was Wesley Sneijder, but that was because, and Wes Sneijder has now come out since the deadline and said, I did try to negotiate with United, but we couldn't agree terms. And it's a shame because I don't think they can hope to overthrow the likes of Barcelona with Tom Cleverley and Anderson, for example. I know they have other players, but I just don't think they have the midfield to trouble the likes of Barcelona or even, dare I say it, Manchester City, Manchester United. And Sneijder would have gone some way to kind of redressing that balance. But overall, De Gea, Jones, who I think is going to be a monster, and Ashley Young, who's had a fantastic start to the season. I think Sir Alex Ferguson, given that he signed those players as quickly as he did, and let's face it, he had them signed before Wimbledon was finished, I think he's done good business this summer.
That pretty much rounds everything up. Darren Lewis, Football Spy, thank you very much for joining us on the Mirror Football Podcast. Joining us on the phone right now, we have Mirror Football columnist and pundit extraordinaire, Robbie Savage. Robbie, how's it going?
Hi, thanks, Simon. You?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Now, the question on everybody's lips, first off, how did the tattooing go last week?
Yeah, it was a 7-hour stint, mate. It was very, very painful, but one thing's for sure, the Xavi Armani tattoo I had is no more, so nobody can now take the mick out of me for having probably one of the worst tattoos in history.
So what have they done? Have they just removed it, or have you put something on top of it?
No, I put something on top of it. Just a big black square.
Oh, right, okay.
No, I've just got, it's just like flowers and stars, and yeah, it looks quite nice, actually. I'm pleased with it.
Okay, cool. And obviously you're talking to us today, it's the day after the night before, deadline day last night, a long old stint for everybody concerned. Who would you say the biggest winners in the transfer window were, Robbie?
I think you've got to look at Stoke, QPR and possibly Spurs with Scott Parker. I think Stoke bought, obviously, Woodgate and a free option, and a free, wasn't it, and they've spent, is it 20 million on Palacios and Crouch? I think that just improves their squad. I think if Woodgate can stay fit, he's a great signing for Stoke. Upson's got a lot to prove after the World Cup, when he hasn't really recovered from that Germany game, and Crouch and Palacios, so I think they've done well. I think QPR now have enhanced their chances of staying up, probably the best chance now of all the promoted teams, with Wright Phillips, Joy Barton, so I think they've done good business. And obviously Craig Bellamy to Liverpool is a great one. You know, not sure Craig will start every week, but he'd be an impact player with his pace. But Scott Parker was the best one for me. £5 million to Spurs. Can't understand why Arsenal, you know, didn't go in for him. But £5 million is, in my opinion, for England's holding midfielder, is a bargain. And one mention for Owen Hargreaves. A lot's been said about him, but if he can stay fit, which is obviously has been his biggest problem for years, or if he can get fit, you know, play to his potential, I think City have pulled off a great one there.
And in terms of Arsenal, you mentioned they didn't get Scott Parker, he ended up going to Tottenham. How would you assess Arsenal's transfer window? They've brought two defenders in, Andre Santos and Per Mertesacker, and have they strengthened enough, do you think?
I'm not sure. For me, Per Mertesacker obviously was great, you know, the well for Werder Bremen. You know, Santos is not in the Brazilian team, so and obviously they bought Park, Chu Young, Arteta and Benny Yoon, so, you know, I don't think it's an Arsene Wenger's policy to buy so many players in such a short space of time, and, you know, maybe some of them are panic buys to bolster the squad after their hate to demolish, you know, demolition at United. So I think Arsenal, I'm not sure. I just think some of them are panic buys. You got to feel for Everton as well, by the way. Arteta, one of the, if not the best players, has left. You know, they've only brought in, I think, one or two players, Royston, Drenthe. So you got to feel for that, for Everton.
Yeah, and in terms of David Moyes, I mean, how would you be feeling if you were David Moyes right now? Because they've barely brought anybody in. They brought two loanees in. They've not made any permanent transfers. They've lost Jermaine Beckford, who's one of their main striking options. And obviously, you know, they're number one midfield creator in Mikel Arteta for a reasonably cheap price, £10 million.
Well, I think that's where Everton's problems are, that you've just said there, that they're one of their number one striking options is join Leicester. I think if Jermaine Beckford's you're one of your main striking options, I think you are in trouble in the Premier League. I think Jermaine Beckford's a good championship player. I think that's his level. But yeah, you've got to think now, Everton, I think the relegation odds will come down, because I fear for Everton this year. David Moyes, year in, year out, keeps pulling rabbits out of hats, making Everton overachieve. You know, this season, you know, he's got young Ross Barkley who could possibly make an impact, but I think Everton are going to be down there. I think Everton are going to really struggle. But I feel for Moyes.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult, at least up until January, where they're obviously the window will open again. What's your view on Chelsea? They did a lot of their business early on in the transfer window, and then right at the very last knock-ins, they managed to snap in there and get Raul Morelos away from Liverpool. Yeah. Obviously, that deal had clearly been going on in the background, and the news of the transfer request came in with about half an hour to go, I think, and everyone sat up and took notice, and the deal was done very quickly. How do you think Morelos will do? Because he's a good, solid passer of a ball, and how will he fit into Villas-Boas' starting?
Yeah, well, I think he struggled at first when he went to Liverpool under Hodgson, but then when Kenny Dalglish took over towards the end of the season, he performed extremely well. I'm surprised, you know, Kenny, you know, he's found surplus of requirements at Anfield. I thought he did it very, very well towards the end of last season. But it's amazing on transfer deadline down when he's clubbed. It's like Christmas Eve. I mean, you're last minute shopping. Some people get things wrong. Some people get things right. But for Morelos, I think it's a fantastic move for him. 12 when he quit the Chelsea, I think that's a great move. He'll fit in well. He's, as I say, I think him and Mata, you know, with Lampard, you know, I think that could be the new midfield three. Maybe Frank maybe adapt his role into like a holding midfielder more, because, you know, I think Frank at 30, is Frank 33 now? I'm not sure he can get box to box and get the goals like he used to. Maybe they might adapt Frank's role to fit Morelos and Mata in to provide the ammunition for, you know, Torres, Drogba, Nelcom, Ludicolo. So that's a very good piece of business. But there's so many lucky players on transfer deadline day as well, because there'd be, you know, I've experienced it in the transfer window where, you know, you could be second or third choice for a club and they panic and they just give you anything you want, really. You look at Newcastle, I'm sure, did they make a bid on inquiry for Liam Ridgewell? You know, that's the last day of the season. That's seems to me as panicking, because why not? The players are available. Surely they're available sooner. It's bizarre. It's madness. It's become a novelty day for people like you and me. It's great, but it's just a novelty. They should scrap the idea of a transfer window. You know, and to be fair, there's some rubbish players who get lucky moves, in my opinion.
One of the great examples of perhaps how to do your transfer business is Sir Alex Ferguson at Old Trafford. He got all his transfer business done nice and early, and he got the players he wanted. He needed to pay big money for some of them. Obviously, Phil Jones, £16.5 million, but he got him in early, and he wasn't rushing around like a madman on deadline day.
Well, I think if you look at the clubs who have done all their business early, United, Chelsea, obviously with the exception of Morelos, I know they didn't get Modric, and City, with the exception of Owen Hargreaves, them three are going to be the best three teams in the Premiership for me, and them three will be challenging for the title. You know, it's amazing they get their business done early. All the other teams have, you know, for different reasons, bought late on. I think QPR have done great. I think Stoke done great. But it's just madness, complete and utter madness, the transfer deadline day. I just can't understand. There is players out there who are available sooner. Why do they leave it to the last minute? It's just mad.
What would you do? I mean, if you're in a position, would you scrap the transfer window?
Well, I'd do before the first ball's kicked.
Yeah, so close it like midnight before opening day.
2 days before the start of the season.
Yeah.
Anybody knows where they are?
Another team who, they brought players in, they shipped players out, they're always featuring heavily on transfer deadline day, is Spurs. Did they lose out by not getting Gary Cahill in when they had the chance?
I think so. I'm surprised Liverpool, I know they got Sebastian Cortes for, he was the best young player in the Copa America. I'm surprised Liverpool didn't go for Gary Cahill. You know, because they have got the money. You know, listening to Harry last night saying maybe it's just a bit, you know, we just couldn't afford to go that bit more, or we just, or his price was maybe a bit too high. You know, strange that, because you got 20 million quid in for Crouch and Palacios. I think Gary Cahill with Scott Parker at 5 million would have been two fantastic signings for Spurs and strengthened the heart of the team. And Dawson and Cahill, Parker and Modric, you know, would have been a great spine of the team with Friedel in goal. And that'd be all. That's a great spine for Spurs. I'm surprised Ali didn't push the boat off for Gary Cahill, really. But from Gary Cahill's perspective, you know, it's up to him now to go back to Porto, perform exceptionally well. I'm sure, I think he's got a year left on his contract, might be two. If he's got a year left, it's up to him to go back, play exceptionally well, cement his place in the England team, and this time next year, if it is 1 year left on his contract, he'll be free. And then he'll have an option of, you know, possibly bigger clubs.
Something I wanted to ask you about as well, Robbie, obviously with the transfer window is now closed, the Premier League managers now have to submit their 25-man squad list for the Premier League by the end of the week, I believe. Then you've obviously got a whole load of players, because Premier League teams, they have a surplus of players, but they can only name 25 for the Premier League. What happens within a club then? You've got all these players, some of whom won't be part of the first team plans. They won't even be in the Premier League squad. How does that affect the dynamic within a club when you've got maybe as many as 8 or 9 players who just aren't part of the plans?
Yeah. Well, that rule wasn't there when I was playing, obviously. I left the Premier League three and a half years ago. So I think it will give benefit to the Championship clubs, because surely as a player, you can't be happy not in the 25-man squad. And there'll be some very, very good players, by the way, left out of them squads. You know, you might be on 50, 60, 70 grand a week, but you know what you're going to do, play reserve team football. But so I think it'll benefit Championship clubs, you know, and players. If their ego's too big, then they really won't go down and play in the Championship. But if they would just want to play football for the love of playing football, then I think they should go out and loan and help Championship teams. I'm not sure that'll happen, but it must be very, very strange. Imagine not being in the 25-man squad. It would have really been disastrous, because I love playing football and I would have gone anywhere to play football. I even went to Brighton to play for a month. I was languishing in League One and, you know, couldn't get a win for love nor money. That was before the Gus Poyet era, you know. But I enjoyed it because I love playing football. So for highly paid Premier League players who are in a 25-man squad, they sit on their backside and pick up their wages with no interest to play, and all they move out and help Championship clubs.
Well, hopefully we'll see a few of those players sort of trickling down the leagues, and it should have a trickle-down effect with the players from the Championship clubs maybe dropping down to League One, and then the League One going down to League Two, and hopefully it will strengthen those teams all the way down the divisions. And you know, with all the loan deals that will be available, it'd be interesting to see how many big names who don't make the squads actually take that drop and move into the Championship. One of the other stories that I wanted to talk to you about, Paolo Di Canio, he's taken over at Swindon Town, and he had a highly publicised spat with his striker Leon Clark at the weekend. Did you see the video of this, Robbie?
Yeah, I did. I think, you know, people can have their own perceptions of either was Leon Clark wrong, was Paolo Di Canio wrong. My own personal point of view is that, you know, for me, the manager is the boss, and whatever the manager does or says is right. You know, I've watched the video of him coming off the pitch, and obviously Di Canio, you know, pulls him towards him, you know, and then Leon Clark reacts by pushing his arm from around him, and then have a bit of a confrontation in the tunnel. But for me, my respect for my managers is so great that, you know, Martin O'Neill, Steve Bruce, Mark Hughes, Nigel Clough, that, you know, I wouldn't even answer him back, never mind, you know, push them off me. So I think as a player, you have to have a huge respect for your manager. And I personally think that Ian Clark was wrong.
And in terms of Paolo Di Canio as a manager, do you think he'll be a success at Swindon Town?
Well, you can't keep falling out of players. That's one thing you can't do, because, you know, one or two is all right. You can't keep falling out of everybody. You have no team. But it was early days in his managerial career. You know, he obviously, results haven't been that good for him. So it's a big test for him as a person, as a character. But, you know, sometimes the best players in the world not become the best managers. I hope he can, because I enjoy playing against him. He was a legend in my eyes, and you know, I've got his shirt hanging up in my garage. I don't mean that we can, I've got quite a nice garage. I turned into a gym. I'm not just going to chuck this shirt in the garage. So yeah, it's testing times with DeCanio.
And it's interesting that someone with such a big name like DeCanio has gone into management in League Two, and he's looking to work his way up. I think
that's good. I think that's brilliant. I think that proves that, you know, he hasn't got, you know, he doesn't big himself up, and he wants to learn. And he wants to learn from a lower league level. That's fantastic. I think it's surprising, because what Paolo DeCanio really wants League Two players, and you know, he must have a good team around him, because let's be fair, Paolo DeCanio's career is mainly in the top flight of football. So it was a strange one, but I think it's refreshing that somebody like Paolo DeCanio wants to start off low.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how Swindon get on this season, hopefully Paolo can keep his relationship with his players nice and amicable. And I don't know what's going to happen with Leon Clark. Apparently he's been made available for loan, so we'll see what happens to him. Coming up this weekend, obviously, we've got the Euro 2012 qualifiers. Wales are playing Montenegro Friday night, England are playing Bulgaria. And then it's England versus Wales at Wembley on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I'm doing Five Live for that one, so I'm there. I'll be watching. Looking forward to it. I think England will win. I think if I was Fabio Capello, I'd give the young'uns a game. Why not? It'd be like, I wouldn't play the young'uns in Bulgaria. I think you've got to go for the more experienced heads. But why not start blooding these youngsters, the Cleverleys of this world, against Wales? You know, when it'll be like a Premier League game. I think Wales have got fantastic individuals. Well, two or three individuals in the Wales team could possibly be in the England squad. Bellamy, Ramsey, Bale. Bellamy plays regular, then you could say them three would get an England squad. I don't think anybody else would. But three players don't make a team, and that's what Wales are. They've got good individuals, but they're not a team, and it's up to Gary Speed to make them play like that. I think England will beat Wales. As much as I'm a passionate Welshman, I just can't see Wales getting anything.
And in terms of the Montenegro game this weekend, that's a very difficult one as well. Montenegro's joint top of the table.
Yeah, but I think the Wales players will have one eye on the game at Wembley on Tuesday.
Right.
You know, I certainly would have when I was playing.
So it's all eyes to Wembley on Tuesday night.
I think so, because they're not going to qualify. You know, you're thinking you're going to be playing for the 5,000 or 6,000 at Cardiff City Stadium against Montenegro. You know, 4 days later or 3 days later, you could be playing against England in front of 80,000 at Wembley. You know, I think as a player, even though you won't admit it, deep down you're thinking, you know, I might just play within myself here to get through this, to look, get ready for Tuesday.
And you'll be able to hear you on the airwaves live on BBC Radio 5 Live for live commentary, yeah?
Yeah, I'm doing me and Laurel doing it, and you can actually see me on the big screen before the game. I've done an advert with Rio Ferdinand and Rachel Yankee from Arsenal Ladies, just play for Mars. So that's going to be on the big screen before the game as well, so that's good.
Excellent stuff. You'll be able to check out Robbie's column on mirrorfootball.co.uk every Friday. And obviously you can check out Robbie's column in the newspaper as well, the Daily Mirror. Robbie, thanks very much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Cheers, mate.
That's just about all we've got time for on the Mirror Football podcast this week. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at Mirror Football. And of course you can check out the website at www.mirrorfootball.co.uk. We'll be back next week.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Oh, well, of course, it is a different way.
Thank you for downloading this podcast, a Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.